So if you're thinking about robotic welding, welcome. It is a journey. The benefits will be enormous. The challenges will also be significant. Welcome to the journey.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the A3, the Robot Industry Podcast. I'd like to welcome the listeners all over the world from Guelph, from Porter Ranch, City of St. Peter's, and Dunbarton Center. Thank you for subscribing to our podcast, and I'm glad that you're here. And I'm happy to welcome John Berg from Aceta Automation. And if you haven't heard about Aceta, they're a 38-year-old robot automation integration company located in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and Waukesha, Wisconsin. Along with his father, John founded Automated Concept, Inc., which eventually grew into Aceta LLC. For nearly 40 years, he's devoted most of his time to this passion by helping customers find better ways to manufacture their products, by lowering their part costs and increasing their productivity. John, welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast.
Thank you, Jim.
So, John, I wanted to get your perspective on kind of what's happening in automatic robot welding.
Well, it is a very hot topic. Most manufacturers today cannot find manual welders. There's just not near enough of them. And the young people, quite frankly, have not been attracted to take up welding as a career. Robotic automation is getting a tremendous amount of activity right now. And we see it as well as other organizations involved and our competitors, et cetera. As always, the interesting part of this is just buying a robot doesn't, for most people, does not solve their issue. There is a learning curve. There's certainly work that usually has to be done for the on the customer's parts to make them work with a robot or be more repeatable. So. While the need is tremendous, getting a successful install in robotic welding certainly has its challenges. Quite frankly, the technology today is certainly better than it was 30 years ago, but it definitely has there is a learning curve and customers have to prepare to take advantage of the technology.
And so what are you seeing with some of the automation that goes into robots with welding?
Well, for most customers, depending entirely on the industries they serve, if they're dealing in consumer goods or even a fair amount of the opportunities in automotive, the parts can tend to be relatively simple and just a few welds. And so they can be manufactured on a fairly small and lower cost system. But if the customer's manufacturing components for agricultural equipment or construction equipment or obviously a whole bunch of other possibilities, the weldments are usually larger. The welding is more, the size of the welds are larger. The material that's being welded is thicker. And so all of those challenges add to the need to have a properly planned cell. Now, I don't want to sound negative about robotic welding. I've made my career on as helping people with weld with robots, and the tools available today are vastly improved over the last several decades. But we also like to be as open with people as we possibly can about the adventure they're about to go on, especially for first-time users, obviously.
And for those first-time users, do you ever get involved in like some studies or some breadboarding exercises for them?
A lot. In fact, we're asked in almost all occasions by first-time users to at least help them identify those parts or assemblies that they should focus on to start with. And that's driven by lots of activities. To be honest, obviously volume. If the customer's making a significant portion of their weldments are one or a part number or a family of part numbers that's closely related, that's usually where the conversation starts. But it also has a lot to do with the complexity of the part and the requirements that are going to be part of the welding cell to make it a successful installation.
So from a high level, are you seeing more clients with high volume automation needs? Are you seeing maybe high mix, medium to low volume?
I think the people that do high volume, which quite frankly tends to be automotive, but there are other industries, office furniture and several others that have relatively high volumes. But I think those industries are pretty well aware of the technology and have probably either, taken advantage of it or are in the process of adding capability in that area. The customers that we see today are those customers that have traditionally run relatively low volume and very high mix. And so that, of course, adds to the challenge, but on the other hand, also offers in many cases a very quick return on their investment, because they find out that one welding robot can, in most cases, I would say almost all, can produce what three manual welding stations can produce. So with the issues of not being able to find welders and the issues of increased production, it's a pretty simple financial calculation about the investment.
And are you finding, too, part of your task is to help companies use robots more often and get trained and keep that training up?
Of course. I mean, that is any integrator that's worth their salt understands that that the sale of an industrial robot is and the installation is probably just the beginning. And that customers are going to need different levels of support. But it is so critical, at least in my experience, it's very, very critical to get the customer started on the right foot. Unfortunately, we still see situations where customers believe they can just go out and buy a robot like they've bought any other piece of equipment or just put it on their shop floor and it'll be successful. Certainly that happens. There's no question about it. But the rule is that if we can assist them to get going in the right direction and how they approach fixturing and programming and the care and use of the robot, that they'll be far further down the road within a few months.
You know, you mentioned about care and use of the robot. I mean, in automated welding, it really is important, like cleaning your weld guns and such. What are some of the things that are coming up as I mentioned that to you?
Well, the accessories that are available for a automated welding cell are vast and offered by several manufacturers. Certainly, there are companies that have tended to focus more in automated welding, or accessories for an automated welding cell than others. But the interesting fact is that what catches some users off guard is welding consumables are directly related to the amount of welding that is done, or in the industry refers to it as deposition rate, the pounds of wire come out of a weld gun. And what they're surprised about is that they're used to, in a manual situation, they can replace their contact tip maybe once every other day or maybe once a day, depending on the type. However, since the robot is welding 3x of what a manual station welds, you're going to replace the consumables at three times the rate. And a lot of people, you know, they're just, as I said, they're just caught off guard by that until they understand. However, in most cases, a properly designed robotic weld cell will service the customer very, very well for hours and hours with low maintenance.
And so what are some of the trends that you're actually seeing in automated welding today? Is it maybe past the consumables? Are you seeing a lot of vision inspection going on?
Well, it's been a topic for a long, long time, and there are certainly two kind of levels of adaptive robotic welding. The first level is well-known technology. It starts with a capability called touch sensing, where the robot itself acts as a probing system to literally locate the members of a weldment or the joint of a weldment, and so that the weld can start in the right location, even though the materials may be causing variation in the location of that joint. And then a technology called through-arc seam tracking, which again has been around for decades, and the ability to actually use feedback from the welding process to correct the direction of the weld and follow the seam. So that's one level, very common, used in many, many installations. The next level is the use of some kind of external vision system. The first and maybe most obvious is to just use a camera to locate the joint prior to even putting the wire to the joint and starting to weld. That's one opportunity and a modest, comparatively, investment. The next opportunity is to use a real-time seam tracker. And there are various manufacturers of these devices. And this is a system that can actually monitor the weld location during the welding process and send a correction for the path back to the robot. Again, has the technology has been around for quite some time. The use has been limited, I think mostly because it adds complexity. It makes the whole welding, the end of the welding torch and the area around the welding torch larger, which restricts the space that maybe you can get into to weld, etc. But certainly it's a technology that needs and is being used more and more every day.
And can robots do all of our welding?
Never, or at least not in my opinion. There is a significant amount of welding that is done for aesthetic appeal and in very low volume and the fixturing of the weldment is cost prohibitive compared to manual welding. I probably use the term never too loosely. I mean, 50 years from now, maybe 30 years from now, maybe technology is changing so quickly, but I think welding, manual welding is going to be around for a long, long time.
And that's good to hear. Are systems getting bigger and more complex? Like from your like high level view, because you were one of the leaders in building automated welding systems, are they getting leaner or decentralized? What are you seeing?
You know, it's all over the board. And quite frankly, we are very active in trying to get non-users into robotic welding with as simple yet versatile system as we possibly can. It's a little bit of definitely walk before you run. I'm working right now with a potential first-time user where their weldment is so large that it just doesn't fit in a standard system. So they are looking at a system that has much larger positioning equipment, etc. And in fact, we are looking at and seriously considering using a material handling robot as the positioner for a welding robot or even a pair of welding robots. On the other end, like I said, if we can, we always recommend to a user that they start with something that is a little bit less investment but maybe a quicker return.
So keeping it simple.
Absolutely.
Well, I like the idea of using a robot as a material handling. So you're using a robot to feed a robot or welder.
Correct.
So I wanted to kind of get back to one of the earlier questions that I thought I'd ask you. And this comes from, like, you've been involved in robotics and automation and welding for 40 years. What do you see as the greatest challenge for manufacturing in the United States today?
Well, pointing to one single thing is difficult. I think a lot of people who aren't involved in manufacturing think it's a lot simpler than it is. And I think they believe that you buy material, you prepare it, whether it's going to be welded or machined, or you bolt it together and you offer a product. And the variables that come through every one of those steps are just until you've experienced it, they're very, very difficult to understand. One of the areas that I always mention to many customers is most consumers of a lawnmower, for example, they have no concept, unless they're involved in manufacturing, they have no concept what that manufacturer spends just to paint their product. And we've become so critical of things like that. We want our lawnmower to look like our automobiles from a paint job standpoint. Why? Because we can. I mean, right. The technology allows us to have that kind of thing. So the challenges are just basically manufacturing, and they have been for a long, long time. The next challenge is acceptance of change. So many, most products that have grown from, an original idea into maybe something of significant volume started out in very low volumes. Almost any method could work in manufacturing the product, but as the volumes grew and the pressures, usually customers or even organizations that are the originator of an idea, they eventually have competition, and so now they have pricing pressures and they need to lower their costs. And then there's the whole challenge that we mentioned very early on. Unfortunately, shop floor people that want to work on the shop floor are just becoming less and less. Most of my customers I walk through, and other than some very rudimentary positions, which has its challenges in itself, most of the people are not young. They're in their probably late 40s, if not well into their 50s. And the challenges that these manufacturers are going to have in attracting young people are very, very significant. And so what do they do? Well, in many cases, they have to seriously consider automation as the only really viable alternative.
And what about even retaining those good employees? Like, you're right about attracting new employees in, but what about retaining these employees once they're in?
Well, to be honest with you, we think automation, we have multiple cases where automation has actually improved the customer's ability to maintain people and maintain their employees. They see their employer as being progressive, and that they're always looking for a better way. On our topic of welding, the fact of the matter is, while there are hundreds of thousands of very, very good manual welders out there welding every day, and many of them have made a career at it. and they see they get a lot of security and very positive feelings about producing a high quality product. But the fact of the matter is, they're standing there in garbed up in protective clothing. They're wearing a mask. There's smoke from the process. There's some of which is certainly not conducive to good health. And so it's no wonder that young people are not flocking to become welders, even though a good welder today, if anybody checks into it, is a very lucrative job. And yes. And companies, it's certainly one of probably the higher paid jobs on the shop floor.
So I guess when I ask this next question, what do you see happening to welding in the future? I kind of assume some of what you're going to say.
Well, obviously, I don't think there's any question it will become more and more automated. But I think there are also technologies like, what is the laser going? You know, we've already seen what the laser has meant to cutting material and flat sheet material that's cut into a shape. I don't know what percentage today is being cut by laser, but if you compare it to other processes, it has to be pretty high, especially in materials, say an eighth of an inch and thinner. Mm-hmm. Now we want to put that material back together. What does it mean to use a laser to do that? And there's a lot of very, very good organizations that are working on processes that do that. So where today people might say, oh, I weld that at 20 inches a minute. You take the same process and add a laser to it, and all of a sudden you're doubling or tripling the speed at which you can weld. And it adds to the other side where the parts have to be more precise to do that, but the benefits are obviously pretty easily understood.
John, I thank you for coming onto the show today. I wanted to find out, is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that you wanted to mention to our audience?
Well, I think there's two or three things that we always try to start, especially with first-time users. The first one is as much as possible, a top to bottom agreement within the organization that they want to use automation in their manufacturing processes. And it can't just be the owner or the president or the senior executive staff, and it can't just be the engineering group or even the shop floor people trying to push it uphill. It needs to be an overall agreement that we're willing to invest and to change, quite frankly, to make this successful. And those that have embraced that change, they have seen huge benefits. Unfortunately, we find in a lot of situations where some group has been left out of the discussion, and it's caused delays in the success. Usually, we get around those situations, but it could be a lot better if we just all had agreement when we start. And then there are some logical steps that you go through. Understanding what success is going to look like versus what failure might look like, and picking out logical applications, etc., which a robotic integrator, should be well versed in helping the customer do that.
John, thank you very much for coming on the podcast today. I certainly appreciate it. How can people get a hold of you?
Well, first, we'd recommend just visit Aceta.com and understand better what we do, but either use the contact tab on our website or email us at info@aceta.com.
That's great. And I've got an 844 number. So if you want to use the phone, it's 844, then 4, then ACIETA on your dial pad. Today's sponsor is NuScale Robotics. NuScale Robotics designs and builds Q-Span automated small part measurement system that automates digital caliper measurements, data logging, and part handling. Q-Span picks, measures, records, and places. The Q-Span system is the new standard for quality control solution for high mix, small batch manufacturing and works with Universal Robots' line of collaborative robots, so it's easy and safe to deploy in your QC lab. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. And these four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, and users research group, and consulting firms like myself throughout the world that are driving automation forward. I'd also like to recognize our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And they're at paintedrobot.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for audio production, my partner, Janet, and our partners, A3 and Painted Robot, and our sponsor, NuScale Robotics.